Warning: The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage. This is an encore presentation of The Savage Nation.
Welcome to The Savage Nation Thanksgiving edition. We all thank God for today, and we put together some of the greatest moments from The Savage Nation for your listening pleasure. It is The Savage Nation. From God to Google in one generation. I was thinking about that on the bicycle. From God to Google in one generation. Well, at least that's the way it looks to me tonight on The Savage Nation. If you ever read The Great Gatsby by F. Scott Fitzgerald, there's a line that I particularly find interesting. The orgiastic future that year by year recedes before us. It eluded us then, but that's no matter. We all think we're going to have this perfect future that is orgiastic. And then one fine morning we wake up and realize there is no future. And then one fine morning the veteran finds himself in a little encampment in the hills of North Afghanistan, fighting an insurgency being forgotten by the American people. Or one fine day in the past, the boys find themselves digging holes in the snow in the Ardennes forest, facing 88-millimeter barrage from the Germans, and they see their friends atomized in the next foxhole, and they wonder, why did the artillery shell land in their friend's foxhole and not their foxhole? Did God hate their friend and love them? Can they still believe in God in a situation like that? The truth is, and it's not just a homily, I owe my freedom of speech to those who died in wars before. I owe my freedom of speech to those fighting Obama today. Because as sure as I'm sitting here, Obama and the acolytes around them would steal my freedom of speech if they had the power to do so. If they dared grab it, they would do it. There's no question in my mind that the Revolutionary Guard surrounding Obama would take away my freedom of speech, your freedom of speech, just as Abraham Lincoln did during his tenure as a dictator in the United States of America. Never forget that Lincoln, who was revered and held up on a pedestal, you know, some great, wonderful saint, Lincoln was a dictator. Lincoln was a horrible human being and a dangerous president. Popularly, as a kid in school, you hear he's freed the slaves. That's wonderful. But what you don't know is General Sherman of the South also wanted to free the slaves. It wasn't about the slaves. It was about a couple of things. The South wanted to secede because it was doing very well without sending money to the North. And the North wanted to dominate the South economically. And Lincoln was a dictator. No freedom of the press. Anyone spoke out against him, he arrested journalists. You don't know this. You look at a penny and you think Honest Abe. Well, he took power into his hands in a way that America hadn't seen before and didn't see until FDR. And now we're seeing it again under this wonderful character in the White House, Barack Obama. And never forget that one of Obama's mentors was Abraham Lincoln. And when you didn't agree with Lincoln, they arrested you. Oh, well, it was done for the sake of America, you see. Lincoln did it to protect America and for the betterment of America. Doesn't that sound familiar to you? It should sound familiar too, because Obama has threatened the GOP with executive orders on all of his new ideas. President Obama continued throwing his entire second-term agenda against the wall, challenging Republicans to join him and support more federal spending, pass amnesty for 30 million or 50 million illegal aliens, and tackle all of the other left-wing challenges. We saw how well he did with Obamacare, and that doesn't stop him. The man doesn't understand that it's a failure. The man keeps ratcheting up his partisanship. He keeps ratcheting up his left-wing fanaticism, no matter what failures he faces. It's never enough for these left-wing. And I consider them the equivalent of the Revolutionary Guards in Iran. Make no mistake about it. Those around Obama are just as fanatical as Iran's Revolutionary Guards. The IRC in Iran is no more fanatic than those surrounding Obama in so many ways. And unfortunately for us, he turns his wrath on the American people, not on our enemies. In fact, he sent John Kerry, the great friend of Israel, to stab Israel in the back. Who better to stab Israel in the back than John Kerry? China, U.S. armies, by the way, going through a joint exercise in Hawaii. Oh, yeah, first time in American history. Never done before except under Barack Hussein Obama. Army officials from China and the U.S. are meeting in Hawaii for an annual disaster relief exercise. And a disaster relief. Do you actually believe the People's Liberation Army is in Hawaii under Obama? And this Dr. Strangelove there running the military? What's his name? Bagel? Hegel the Bagel? Dr. Strangelove? Do you actually believe they invited the Chinese troops to our shores for the first time in American history, by the way, in order to train for disaster relief? I don't. I don't believe it at all. I think Obama's giving them a little feel for the terrain. But let's let it go with that. I don't want to get too far ahead of myself. I'm still warming up. Now, how do I feel tonight is the issue. That'll determine where I go with the show. As I told you, I suffered a neck injury about 4 weeks ago from a masseuse. Yeah, I swear to God, I don't let anyone touch my body, basically. I've gotten very far in life. I don't go into the body manipulation. I don't like it. It's unnatural for me. I hate massage. I hate it. I've always hated it. When I was 18, I got a massage once. I hated the guy. He was a sadistic SOB. I was in the Bahamas with some friends. The guy was like a monster. I was 18, in very good shape. I was a weightlift. I walked out like I was in pain for a month. So I decided then never, ever to get a massage. I got talked into it. And, wow, the neck went out. She gave a dig. It was like, you know what Rolfing is? I said gentle. I'm lucky she didn't do a snap. It could have been like a movie snap. And the thing is, the dog hated her, didn't trust her the whole time, kept snapping at her feet. No, now that I think, I'm looking back now. He kept running in the living room while I'm on the table and nipping at the feet. And she's saying, Teddy, get out of here. Teddy, go away. I said, it's okay. I'll ask her to leave. She says, no, I got him under control. Like a Brunhilde from Auschwitz. Like a Brunhilde. And neck, all of us. This was an hour into the massage now. Setting me up. It's like giving a turkey a jigger of vodka before slaughtering it. A friend of mine, an old colonialist from the islands, taught me that. He said that's how they used to do it in the islands. Before they would slaughter the turkey, they'd give it a jigger of gin in those days. The turkey would get a little tipsy, then they'd kill it. And she said the meat was more tender. So she lightened me up with a light massage and then gave me a neck. So that's 4 weeks. Then I'm telling you, I'm entertaining you now because, you know, I got sad talking about death and dying. I can't take it. I think I'd rather talk about my neck pain. Then, wait, it gets worse. The neck is out. I told you the foot was out for a while, the right foot, which somehow I've cured. I don't know. I got a strap to pull. It's crazy. You get older. Crazy things happen. I'm very lucky so far. Boy, am I lucky. I'm so ahead of the curve. It's all of my vitamins, minerals, herbs, nutrients. Don't listen to the morons who tell you do what you want. You gotta listen to the idiots. If I had eaten the way my father ate, I would have been dead 40 years. Oh, you do anything you want. Life is too short. What a brilliant way to live in the year 2013. Throw out all the knowledge that everyone's gained over the last 50 years. All the knowledge of nutrition and vitamins, because you know better. Smoke a cigar and just stick pork fat down your stomach. And then tell everybody how smart you are. I say to myself, as people continue to be so ignorant in this day and age, and wonder why people laugh at so-called conservatives who act like the blobs that they are. They look it, they sound it, they walk it, they talk it. I say to myself. So, the foot was out, so I cured it. So then, I can't say who. A family member greatly believes in chiropractic. Now, I don't want to knock chiropractic, because I've known chiropractors. I don't trust chiropractors, really. Chiropractors are always shady. They're about as shady as podiatrists. No, I'm sorry. I told you the story about the shady podiatrist in Jackson Heights whose son became an Anglophile because he was ashamed of his Jewish roots and changed his name. And then became very rich, by the way, doing so. Hid the Jewish roots because the father was like a crazy, like out of the father was weird, like a podiatrist with... He had like a weird office in Jackson Heights that we used to go to pick the kid up to go out with him. And the father would always come out of a back room. It was such a seedy office with weird contraptions. You know, those doctors are basically tied into the insurance industry. That's what I'm getting at. Chiropractor, all insurance fraudsters. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Mike Huckabee. Is it fair? Is it fair? Is it fair he's paying this and I'm paying this? Because you don't understand it.
Weekdays 9 to noon on Hot Talk 560, you know, like KSFO.
When I hear that, it's toast. When I hear this, I smell toast. When I hear this, I smell ink. And I know I'm going to settle down to total lies from the beginning to the end today. You see people in San Francisco and the Bay Area sitting and reading it. You know, when you see a person reading and using their finger as they go down a column, there's two things you learn right away. They're liberals and stupid. They read this paper as though it's the Holy Grail. They can quote the Chronicle chapter and verse. So there's an article on the front page which is very interesting. And it says, GOP hopefuls testing more inclusive tone. Oh. More inclusive tone? Now, what does more inclusive mean? A Republican National Committee's postmortem what went wrong in the 2012 elections, that their future GOPTIN candidates must show that they care about minorities, gays, and others that don't share their views on social issues. Two of California's likely Republican candidates for governor are going to put that to the test. Are voters, particularly conservative ones, ready for GOP candidates who are pro-choice, pro-same-sex marriage rights, and pro-pathway to citizenship for those in the U.S. illegally? Wow. This is a test case nationally of what the Growth and Opportunity Project was suggesting, said some unknown schmuck from Sausalito, and allegedly a GOP veteran and strategist. We never heard of him. I didn't even know there was a conservative in Sausalito. I had no idea. I had no idea there were conservatives allowed in Sausalito. But I ask you a further question. Should the Republican Party be more inclusive or less inclusive, and why? Should the Republican Party understand that, well, the country's changed and it's time to throw away family values? Well, the country's changed and it's hard to accept the fact that everyone is in favor of amnesty for illegal aliens, homosexual marriage is just fine and dandy, and that abortion should be available on demand. Now, I would ask you a question to go with that question, which is, if the Republicans adopt this leftist agenda, then what separates them or distinguishes them from the leftist agenda and the leftists? Why vote? No, why vote Republican? See, I think that they shouldn't adopt a more inclusive position. Why? Well, for one, I don't believe in those positions. That's number one. But let's put aside my beliefs. If the two parties have absolutely no differential, then why have two parties? The answer is because we don't. Right now we have one party. We have a one-party system playing two-card Monty. Anyway, you get the drift of the show. Now, I saw a movie the other night with an actor in it, Ving Rhames. One of the biggest guys I've ever seen in my life, Ving Rhames. Monster. First, I thought it was Mike Tyson in a jailhouse movie. I'm going to get back to God with this movie. I forget the movie. He plays this the biggest guy in the prison, and everyone's afraid of him, as they should be, because he just looks at them. And they bring in, like, young punks who think they're tough. And the guard brings him in to see them. And he sets them straight in about 3 minutes, telling them what's waiting for them with their attitude of what's going to happen to them in that prison if they don't change their ways. So in that sense, he's playing God with them. That's one story. Later on in the movie, his son, he finds out, is in prison as well, another gangbanger who won't talk to him because the son hates him because he abandoned his mother. And the son holds it against him and considers him an evil man. Later on in this movie, I forget the name of it, Ving Rhames' character gets cancer, brain cancer. There's a very interesting scenes between him and his neurosurgeon, played by a frail, elderly, white-haired white man who's trying to help him, and this monster, monster big guy. Movie Caged Animal, Ving Rhames. Maybe that was it. Unbelievable movie. Very simplistic plot. So he gets brain cancer. The son won't talk to him. Finally sends a message down the line that he wants to talk to his son. The son doesn't want to see him. And he says, why should I talk to you? And he says, son, I have cancer. So he says, so what do you want from me? Sympathy? But eventually the son warms up to him and they become sort of somewhat, they have a little relationship in prison. And then the way the script is written is very intriguing. The Ving Rhames character says that God works in strange ways. And he says, it was the cancer that God gave me that enabled me to reach out to my son and have my son reach back out to me and for me to have something with my son before I died. I thought that was interesting, and it was very beautifully written in that sense. Very simple theme, but very well done and very satisfying as a movie. But does real life work that way? I said to myself. I mean, does real life work that way? I go back again. I'm a realist. At the end of the day, I'm a realist. When... You know, I don't want to go into me again. It's too much me. Well, it is about me. May as well be about me. But again, I go back to when I was a kid watching the fights. you know, the Gillette to look sharp and beyond the ball, to be sharp and beyond. Da-da-da. My father watched the fights every Friday night, so I had to watch them. I was a kid. I couldn't go out yet. So he watched the fights. My uncle, I loved my uncle. He would sit on the couch, and every blow he would feel. At least my father didn't move. I knew my father was, like, somehow smarter. No disrespect. But my uncle was more primitive. As the fighter he was rooting for was throwing punches, he was moving on the couch. He threw a left, my uncle moved with the left. He threw a right, my uncle moved with the right. And grunched and groaned and And I looked at it as a kid saying, all right, there's a difference in people, I'll tell you that. I liked my father more than my uncle at that moment. I thought there was something a little off there with the movement, with the but anyway, the fighters, when they would come out, would pray. As I said, on one side of the ring, the fighter would pray to God, get on his knees, cross himself. And the other diagonal side, fighter get on his knees, cross himself. Both praying to God. It was so touching. And one would win and one would lose. So why did one win and one lose? I didn't understand that. Maybe one was better? I didn't understand. I didn't understand it. But even today when a fighter wins, as I said to you, they usually ask him, how did he win? How did he beat this other? He said because of his faith in God. God, I like that. I like that part of it. HBO usually cut him right off. Or Showtime, the boxing. Showtime. The guys cut him right off. Whenever he says God, they don't let it go out on the air because that's against the atheists of Hollywood. You can't have the Caesars of Hollywood who control HBO, Showtime, VO, HBO, Obama. Those guys who control the world don't want you to hear anything about God.
This is an encore presentation of the Savage Nation.
This is Michael Savage. I hope you're enjoying your Thanksgiving dinner and your friends and family and these wonderful, great moments from the Savage Nation. You know, something is wrong when I agree with Charles Schumer, and today is one of those days. I'm shocked. I'm giddy with this. Schumer came out against chicken that's going to be slaughtered and raised in China, and they're going to bring it into America. Can you believe this? I mean, how'd that work out for our dogs, our cats? The chicken from China killed our dogs and cats, so now they need a new market. So they got some shyster congressman to go to the agriculture department to let them, listen to this, raise the chicken in China is bad enough, and slaughter it in China, and then send it over here. I would never, ever eat Chinese chicken. Let them eat. Let the people from the agriculture department eat General Cho's chicken. Listen to clip two now. Charles Schumer, I agree with him. It's shocking.
China has a terrible record on health safety, and chickens are one of the things that need the most care and inspections. China has been a massive source of food poisoning here in America. Amazing. For years. Why is the USDA doing it? We just don't know.
I can't believe it. I'm shocked. Well, I can figure this out, okay, how it happened that he's interested in a chicken. And it's a natural affinity, okay, for Schumer to be interested in chickens to this extent. But I think it goes back maybe to the Schechter brothers somehow. I can't explain it. I can't put my fingers on it exactly. All right, so let's say this is a good thing he's doing. Why would they bring Chinese chickens into America? I would never eat them. I would never touch any food, by the way, from China. I wouldn't. I try never to eat it. Now, I know if I go to a restaurant, I'm getting Chinese chicken already, probably. Worse than that. If I buy food, yes. I generally buy chickens raised locally. They're hippie chickens. I call them hippie chickens. They were happy to die. They died happily. I like beef that's raised on grass-fed beef. You don't like it? Go ahead, eat your poison. Eat beef raised with toxic chemicals. See if I care. You got to be crazy not to want to eat foods that are raised organically if you can get them and you can afford it. Why not? Is something against it? Or does it make me into somehow I'm not a man because I'm eating food that's... I love that. Real men don't eat organic food. I love that one. No, they eat poison food. Real man smokes a cigar and eats a toxic steak and then follows it up with a nice buttery potato. How'd that work out for the arteries of your father? You know I'm a boater, right? And you know I sold my boat, my beloved boat, after 5 years. I had another one for 5 years and sold it. I had a Grand Banks 42 I sold in 2009 that I bought new in 2002. I owned it for 7 years. I bought it new. I loved that boat. It was a revelation for me to step up from a Bayliner 38. The Bayliner was like a Frisbee on the bay. I was terrified of docking that boat. Because it was a shallow beam, for those of you who don't know boats, I mean, a shallow draft rather, meaning it was shallow underneath. So it skidded on the water, and in the wind, you couldn't dock the thing. You'd be banging into docks. It was a nightmare. Every time I docked, I would skid across the water. It was like my heart would pound. It was sort of like a guy learning to land the plane at night in a wind. So I hated the boat. And then I bought the GB42, and I loved the boat because it was deep keel, big propellers. It was a world apart. Then I sold that in 2009, and I bought a used boat. It was 2 years old. I bought it in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. It was a Grand Banks 59 Aleutian, which I always wanted. I always wanted that boat. So I found the great boat, and I bought it. And boy, it was different. It had stabilizers. It had a bow thruster. I added a stern thruster. It was like driving a little ocean liner. And I've enjoyed it from 2009 until this year when I sold it to lovely people who, by the way, drove it out of my dock about 2 weeks ago and drove it down to Mexico. They got there in 48 hours from my dock to Ensenada. Got it ready, and they put it on a ship. It may be in Florida in a couple of weeks. Now, so I said, no more boats. I'm not buying any more boats. I just bought another boat. So I'm a little reluctant to tell you what I bought, but I bought another boat, a 40-foot. I went down from a 60-foot to a 40-foot, a boat called a Windsor Craft. They're very little-known boats. They're built in Turkey by Viking. Now, why I'm telling you this is because I just had a survey done and it arrived 3 minutes ago by email. You know what a boat survey is like? A boat survey is about like doing, it's like buying a used car, buying 20 used cars at once. Buying a boat is like buying 20 used cars at once and trying to analyze whether to buy it or not. So I just got the Marine survey, which I'd like to share with you because some of it's very interesting. Shall I do it or not? Raise your hands. Do you want me to read you the Marine survey, or do you want me to talk about MSNBC? To the end of the show, I'm going to go to dinner anyway. At the end of the show, I'm going to go to dinner and have two beers and I'll probably have spaghetti and meatballs, and then I'm going to come home and watch Homeland late tonight because I missed it last night. And then I'm going to go to sleep and have nightmares all night about politics. And then wake up and push the wheel, the rock up the hill again. Tomorrow's another day of the myth of Sisyphus. Sisyphus Savage will be back tomorrow. Raise your hand if you want me to read you can't raise your hand in the audience. You can. You want me to read 855-4728? Okay, I'll give you a short version. Let's see what the surveyor said. The above-captioned vessel was surveyed on November 18, 2013, while afloat in its berth and during haul-out at Fort Lauderdale, Florida, for the purpose of hull condition and marine risk survey, commonly referred to as a pre-purchase survey. It's very interesting, even if you're not a boater. This survey includes the inspection of hull and deck structure, installation of hardware equipment, plumbing and electrical systems, blah, blah, blah. In addition, attempts were made to operate all equipment aboard the vessel. The interior of the vessel was inspected and found to be in very good cosmetic condition. All partitions, bulkheads, and epoxy fastenings were inspected, were accessible, found to be in good condition. All through hull fittings below the waterline were noted to be in good condition. Fitted with operable shutoff valves and bonded to a central bonding system, with the exception of one which was seized. Oh, no good. No good. Most electrical equipment was inspected. Three bilge high water alarms were tested and found to be in good condition. Some pumps were tested. Batteries were checked with an electronic load test. All five were found to be in good. This is real good stuff for an Eddie. It's like an Eddie show. But I don't know if like women listening to this show in Minnesota would be interested. The trial run was conducted offshore Port Everglades Atlantic Ocean. A diesel surveyor is scheduled to be aboard in the near future to check the condition. It was noted there was no abnormal smoking at the exhausts. The engines were noted to do within approximately 30 RPMs of their maximum rating. I love motors. I just love this stuff. Propeller shafts were found to turn true at the shaft logs. Don't you love this? Don't you like a phrase like, the propeller shafts were found to turn true at the shaft logs? That's sexy. A backdown test was conducted during which the engines were noted to hold firm on their mounts. That is a certain charm to that. Steering, good. During haul-out, the bottom was soldered with a phenolic hammer. That sounds almost S&M. During haul-out, the bottom was soldered with a phenolic hammer? That sounds like a Lady Gaga thing. During a haul-out, the bottom was soldered with a phenolic hammer, parenthesis, a tool used to detect voids, separations, delaminations, areas of deterioration, etc., and found to be sound. No signs of blisters were noted in the fiberglass. All in the water. Fittings and running gear were found to show. The prop blades were observed for proper alignment, noted to turn slightly out of true. Not good. That's not good. The propeller shafts to strut alignments appear to be within normal limits for this. The cutlass bearings were found to be within limits. The rudders were noted to be in good condition and properly lined. The anti-fouling pad was noted to be within its limits. The zincs were noted to be within limits of effect. The top sides also found to be sound. The decks and superstructure were found. The navigation lights were tested. The fuel tanks were no leak. All right. Remarks and recommendation. I'm reading a ship survey for those of you who ever want to buy a boat. Both propellers were noted to turn slightly out of true. Reconditioned if vibration warrants. Note excessive vibration was detected. What? Excessive vibration was detected during the trial run? That's not good. Two, at least four of the through-hull external strainers were noted to be damaged? Not good. Three, elevated moisture readings were noted in the bottom in a few areas, mainly at the keel and starboard beneath the aft and middle ports. No delamination. No. The trim tabs operated, however, they are wired the reverse of normal. Oh, no. Oh, no. Rewire as desired? Decks and superstructure. Elevated moisture readings were noted mainly around the midship cleats. Forget about this. Cockpit. Oh, this is getting interesting. I got a neck ache already. Number six. No, I'm really getting palpitations and a pain in my neck. Six. I swore no more boats. Six, water leakage was noted in the vicinity of the freshwater pressure pump and its plumbing. Oh, no! Determined source and repair. Seven, water was noted in the electric grill, as well as the compartment beneath it and the compartments to port. Keep this area covered. Oh, no! Eight, the U-line ice maker did not produce cold. Oh, no! Check its power cord and ensure that it is plugged. Oh, I'm getting a migraine. Oh, this is terrible. Nine, corrosion, most likely due to leakage at the generator seawater cooling pump above it, was noted at the low-pressure fuel pump. Ugh. Wire brush and tree to replace fuel pump on at the seawater cooling pump for leak. I can't take this. I said no more boats. I was forced into this. 10. It's because it's one of the most beautiful boats ever made, but I don't need this headache. 10. A lack of cooling water flow was noted in the generator sea strainer. No! That's terrible! Recommend seawater intake hose be replaced, an entire system checked for blockage, barnacles, and cleaned as necessary. I'm going to buy a boat with barnacles? Additionally, the generator seacock was blocked from closure by the location of the port bilge pump. Oh, my God. Helm. The autopilot powered up and acted normal but did not steer a course. Oh, great. That's great. That should come in very handy on a first cruise. The autopilot doesn't work. 12, the starboard windshield washer does not produce water. Great. Oh, here's the killer. The Raymarine E80 radar function did not operate. This is the DV player did not the DVD player in the stateroom did not open its tray to allow for playing a DVD. Are you kidding me? This is getting better by the minute. 15, a lack of water flow was noted in the air conditioner sea strainer. Oh my God. This goes on and on. This guy, I'm going to stop right here. I don't know if you know what I'm doing here. I'll be right back on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
$5 trillion in debt. $5 trillion.
Mark Levin.
Obama is a human wrecking ball.
On Hot Talk 560, KSFO.
President Obama, in addition to the criminal terrorism charges previously filed in Egyptian courts against the president's half-brother, Malik Obama. Malik Obama is quickly becoming a person of interest in Egypt for his alleged management of funds for a terrorist organization based in neighboring Sudan. A group of Egyptian lawyers, meanwhile, have charged President Obama with crimes against humanity for his support of the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt. Obama is likely to be a subject in Morsi's criminal trial because of evidence the Obama administration used the U.S. Embassy in Cairo to provide direct financial support to key Muslim Brotherhood political operatives with the full knowledge and complicity of the Morsi government. This is very serious business because, remember, Obama tried to prevent the Egyptians from self-determination while speaking out of the other side of his mouth talking about democracy. He was fighting their democracy. They didn't want Morsi. They hated Morsi. They hated the Muslim Brotherhood. They hated what they were doing to the country, during which the Christian minority was torched, destroyed, and plundered during the reign of the Muslim Brotherhood and Morsi. And remember who Obama supported, the Muslim Brotherhood and Morsi. So finally they said they had enough. They threw Morsi out. He's on trial. And the military took over. And which side were we on? And where did Wacko McCain go? Remember Wacko McCain? Wacko McCain should be tried on terrorism charges, by the way. So should Lindsey Graham be charged on terrorism charges. Egypt threw Morsi in jail. Egypt wanted no more to do with the Muslim Brotherhood. These two crazy meddlers, these warmongers, McCain and Lindsey Graham, had the gall to go to Egypt and tell the Egyptian people that democracy dictates that they not do what they were doing. Who the hell were they to tell the Egyptians what they knew was going on was wrong? These two guys are very at high risk right now of being dragged into the International Criminal Court, in my estimation, to face terrorism charges for supporting the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt. Now, wouldn't that be a turnabout? Would that be a shocker if the whole house of cards came tumbling down because of what they try to do to the Egyptian people? Would that not be interesting? Don't hold your breath. They have ways of controlling these things. If your son, let's say, stole a bong from a pot store, you go to jail for 2 years. But if you bomb a nation that's sovereign for no reason, you go to the UN and get an award. Now let's listen to the genius John Kerry, the pseudo-aristocrat with ketchup money in clip five.
I'd say a number of nations, not just the French, but ourselves and others, wanted to make sure that we had the tough language necessary, the clarity in the language necessary, to be absolutely certain that we were doing the job and not granting more or doing something sloppily that could wind up with a mistake.
Wow, that's really after the fact. You know, thank the French. The people who really understand this realize that the French were on the right side. This is a strange thing that went on. There must have been a sunspot. Maybe that explains why I agree with the French and Schumer the same weekend. This is bizarre. Right? I mean, Schumer's against Chinese chickens. And I don't mean General Cho's chicken in a Chinese restaurant. I mean, because now suddenly agriculture wants to bring in chickens raised and slaughtered in China. Poison. How'd that work out for your dog that wound up with kidney failure? The Brits are gone. They're finished. Whatever Obama wants, the Brits do, apparently. They're like an appendage of Obama. Did you see Homeland last night? She's starting to wear thin on me. What's her name, that actress? Claire Danes? I liked it till I found out they're trying to remake her as a sex symbol. Now I don't like her anymore. I like her as a half-crazy, vulnerable woman. I like her in that role. But now I saw a new picture of her, like Claire Danes posing nude with an airbrushed face. I don't want to know her anymore. Not interested. The world's filled with the empty heads from Hollywood. I don't need another one. I thought she had depth. She says, I don't want to be Carrie the rest of my life. Oh, come on. Honey, you don't know how lucky you got playing Carrie. You should be Carrie the rest of your life in real life and on the screen. You'd be a better person for it. Whatever you do, please don't try to become a bimbo. Whatever you do, please. You look like every one of those other fake-breasted, airbrushed girls from New York and Hollywood. I mean, nauseating. I liked her with the vulnerability and the craziness face that she could give, where she's in a conflict that she looks left to right, right to left, rolls the eyes. She looked like most of the women I've... No, I'm just... That's a stereotype. I realize that. We all want our women to be crazy. Those days are over. We're the crazy ones now. The guys have become, everything is wrong. The women are strong. They're tough as nails. The guys like, they told them to find their inner self. They found it. Now they can't do anything. They're broken. They're broken down and they can't move. The guy can't move. They're quitters. They break down. They cry. American men have found their inner self so sufficiently that they're broken down and the women have to run the country. Yes, it's very good. And here we go with the next soundbite. Here is the doctor. Here's the weirdest guy. I played Schumer with the chicken. I don't like Kerry. Let me be clear. I never liked him. I don't like fake patrician men who marry for money. Let's start with from the get-go. I don't like fake patrician men who marry for money. The ketchup fortune suddenly is a genius. Bought his way into secretary. Now, he did run for the presidency. You never forget that. He's always waiting in the wings. He thinks he's going to make it. He thinks by stabbing Israel in the back, enough anti-Semites will vote for him, but it won't happen. That was a good line. That was as good as Henny Youngman, but I don't have a violin. Here is Secretary of State John Kerry at the United Arab Emirates. He's always on the globetrotting. Clip three, please.
I believe the Prime Minister needs to recognize that no agreement has been reached about the end game here. That's the subject of the negotiation. The sanctions were put in place in order to bring about a negotiation. Because the first order of business of any superpower is to exercise its power thoughtfully.
Yeah, well, you should have done that before you reached out to Iran. You exercise it. Who taught you that? Of course the first order of business of superpowers is exercise your power thoughtfully. Well, you haven't done that, John. You reached out to Iran, who took you to the cleaners. You found out after the fact, Mr. Kerry, didn't you, that one of the girls in the State Department, some wobbly leftist revolutionary guard that Obama planted there, along with her cohort sister from the European Union who hates Jews, let the Iranians write clauses in the agreement that you didn't even see. So you give them a blank contract. And they said, all right, fill it in any way you want to the Mullahs. The Mullahs, all right, fine, we'll sign that deal. Just leave a few blanks in there, like clauses 1 through 100, and we'll fill it in. And then Kerry says, holy God.
Warning. The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage. This is an encore presentation of The Savage Nation.
This is the Savage Nation Thanksgiving edition. Are those liberal family members finally driving you crazy? Well, glue them to a chair and make them listen to this great moment from the Savage Nation. You have to have timing. You have to have a gene for what I do. Luckily, I was born with the entertainment gene and a sense of timing. I can keep time, play the drums. I can dance on two, I can sing on three, and I can talk on four. Welcome to the Savage Nation. In the last hour, I raised the question of the anger epidemic in America. And I asked the audience to call as to why they're angry. And then at the end of the hour, I move from there, as I normally do. See, this is an organic show. I don't have a script. Unlike some hosts, there is no script in front of me. No set callers who were told to call. I actually, you know, it's an open mic thing. And it really is an open mic as opposed to a Fugazi open mic show. And as such, the show evolves during the hour. So I went from that anger thing. Towards the end, I talked about transcending self and transcending the environment in which we live. Because from the beginning of time, as I said toward the end, people have been trying to transcend reality. You have to understand that wherever you go on Earth, as a trained anthropologist, which I was for many years before I went into other fields and other science, people have tried to transcend reality from the beginning of time, whether it be the cave painter. Later on, it was with the accidental discovery of beer. The Sumerians stumbled upon beer making. I mean, it's an interesting story unto itself. What is a Sumerian? You can look it up and find out the area in ancient Egypt was Sumeria. And they left around some partly chewed, I suppose, grains, which were left in a pot, and it was sitting in the pot, the yeast was in the air, and slightly made some alcohol. They were hungry, so they went back to the old grain that was in the pot that they had left over, partly chewed. They ate it, and they felt different. Suddenly, the ugly Sumerian wife with a big hook nose, who was terribly out of shape because there was no Pilates then, she didn't look so bad to the guy. He went, that's good. Did you do something different with the mash today? No, it's the same thing. Look, I'm asking you nicely. I'm not angry. Did you change the recipe in some way? No, I'm telling you. Look, I'm not going to get mad. I just want to know. Did you do something different? I mean, because everything looks better to me. Did you cook it? And it went on like that. Then through trial and error, they found out that she did do something different. She was afraid to tell the idiot because she was afraid he beat her. That, yes, she spat it back in the pot and then ate it again. He ate it again because he was afraid he'd kill her. That was the beginning of the cave, you know. But that's how that began. And then, of course, wine was originated in ancient Persia. The Iranians, can you imagine? Isn't it funny how the world changes? Knowledge is power, but it's also fascinatingly funny. Here we have the Iranians taken over by psychotic Muslims who don't drink, condemn alcohol, but behind closed doors, I can guarantee there's plenty of booze knocked down in Iran in the highest circles, no matter how holy they may be. You can imagine what they do. So the ancient Persians were very into, they discovered wine. Ancient wine was developed in there. So why? It was a drug. And it was for general consumption. And it was to get people out of the anger and the vicissitudes of their existence. In South America, the drug of choice was the coca leaf. And for thousands of years, the Andean native chewed this little leaf, which gave them a little lift. They weren't really addicted to it. And you have to understand that the coca leaf is much different than the single alkaloid that's extracted from it called cocaine. Because you chew the whole leaf, it's different than taking out the extract called cocaine. And any anthropologist who has studied the Andeans who live at high altitudes, they tell you that they can chew the leaves and work all day long with no food. They can work on the coca leaf, and it apparently leaves them with no side effects. So what am I getting at? I don't know exactly what I'm getting at. People needed a way to get the heck away from everyday life. And people wanted to transcend both themselves and their environment, and many did it through worship. Many do it today through religion, through good works, through spiritual exercise. And they avoid religion's chemical surrogates, which are alcohol, pills, marijuana, and other horrendous drugs. They are able to do it in other ways. They can transcend it that way. Some do it through work. They throw themselves into work. They work day and night. I'm one of those people. That's one of the ways I do it. Because I remember reading that Rodin, one of my favorite sculptor, wrote that work is the only salvation. He found that work, and work was the greatest salvation for all of his problems. And it's true. When I am confused or I don't feel good or I'm not happy or whatever, I find that if I step forth and get working on one of my books or whatever I'm working on, I forget myself. That's what it comes down to. Now, if you're stuck with alcohol, marijuana, coca, barbiturates, opiates, I pity you. Because these poisons will imprison you forever. You'll never transcend anything. And make no mistake about it, marijuana is the most dangerous of all of these drugs. It is the most addictive of all of the drugs. And it is the most dangerous because now it's being sold as something benign. Something almost as pure as chlorophyll itself. And many young people are crashing cars, crashing their lives, jumping off buildings, all because they're smoking a little pot. You look at every movie without exception, the sewer pipe of Hollywood shows happy Hollywoodites either smoking cigarettes, using a gun, or smoking marijuana. And then they lecture you about not using guns and this and that. Now, let's not go into hypocrisy because it's too painful. We're all human beings, and many of us are very angry. And many of us don't know where to turn. We see a government that's disconnected from the Constitution, disconnected from the people, disconnected from the nation itself, never reflecting borders, language, and culture. Never. Never do we hear a politician speak about secure the borders, English only, go back to the culture that built this nation. You ever hear that coming out of a politician? Occasionally you will. Alan West might occasionally say it. There are a few others who will say it now and again. But by and large, we have an atheist, socialist, internationalist in the White House who never, ever speaks about defending our borders, language, and culture. He speaks about the opposite. And the American people are craving someone to speak to those points, begging for a member of the ruling class to come out and say, I tell you, darn it, I'm going to defend our borders. You want to live here, you're going to speak English. We're not going to give out food stamps in 50 languages. You're not voting unless you can speak and write English. That's it. You're not getting Obamacare unless you're willing to step up to the plate and learn English. Boy, would that politician be welcome. Boy, would they be welcome. I don't hear it. I don't even hear it from the Tea Party. In that sense, I'm a party of one. No, I am. I mean, I was defined as such in the New Yorker article, which is still the best thing ever written about me. Is the New York article where they called me party of one. That, of course, was immediately stolen by someone in the radio media and found it to be useful. And that's okay. That's the way it is. That's the story. I love that article. Is politics everything? It really is. Everything is political. The pot roast I ate today was political. Because I normally eat a very lean diet. I created a phrase many years ago, you know, about my nutritional attitudes. And I was one of the, I just always ate lean after childhood because I knew that the diets killed my father and that whole generation died. But today I craved the father, the diet of the fathers. It was unbelievable. So I ordered from the local Italian restaurant. It was so good I almost fainted. Pot roast and ravioli. I'm laughing because it tasted so. The dog was looking at me like, oh my God, he's slurping and dipping the bread. And I can't give it to him because it's too got a little spice in it. So I said, Teddy, you only eat carrots, and I don't have any, but wait a minute. This steamed broccoli, and I gave him, I heard dogs eat broccoli. A lot of people have dogs who eat broccoli. He scoffed down the broccoli. We both went away happy. Then I watched the Tyson thing on HBO in the middle of the day. I decided to be a bum. I didn't want to exercise, bicycle, walk, didn't want to look at the world. I stayed in before the show. What am I getting up so early? Every morning at 6:45, the show is on it 12 hours later. It is the old Lenny Bruce joke when he's on the road. And I never forget, it was the funniest thing I ever heard of all the stuff he did. He's on the road, the phone rings in his motel at 7 in the morning. Ring, ring. Yeah, who's that? It's Mr. Schindler, Mr. Schindler. How are you? Who? Mr. Schindler, we met last night at the club. Did I wake you? And he says, no, I always get up 14 hours before my show. I was died laughing. Because it reminds me of me. I'm getting up at 6:45 every day because I have blackout curtains. In every house I own, the first thing I put in are blackout curtains. I don't care where. Because I've got to control my environment. Because I like to sleep during the day sometimes for an hour, half an hour. But in the morning, no matter how blacked out, you know, light's going to peek through. Bingo, 6:45 now. I'm up. And it's like, oh, stay away from that computer. On the way to the kitchen, don't do a... No U-turn, no divergence, stay away. Don't go near that poison. Don't look at the news. Don't look at your emails. Go into the kitchen. Go outside. Talk to the birds. Take the whatever you got to do. And I'm there. 4 minutes later, bingo, emails. There's the 28 emails, and you scan to see what the dangers are, the danger signs. There was an article on Drudge where it says, I don't know from which article it was, that people who go on the computer stop breathing. Go on the computers, I laugh. They turn on the computer and they stop breathing. They're like, oh, my God, what am I going to find? I didn't know it's true. Many of us stop breathing when we turn it on. Then the news, and that's it. Then I'm locked in already. I said, I'm only going to do it for half an hour. Then it's 3 hours later. I'll be right back on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
I would distinguish between the rhetoric and the tactics versus the ideological differences. I mean, in most countries, you've got, you know, people call me a socialist sometimes, but no, you've got to meet real socialists. you'll have a sense of what a socialist is.
Well, my friends, I know what a socialist is. I've written about it. He's a socialist. Let me give you an example of why the president is lying. He's so clever at what he does that the yes man who invited him to speak at the Wall Street Journal giggled like we're all crazy for calling him a socialist. So let's go to none other than the Merriam-Webster Dictionary and look up together, as you might have done in high school, what socialized medicine is, for example. Medical and hospital services administered by an organized group and paid for by funds obtained usually by assessments, taxation, or philanthropy. Well, I would say that's a loose definition of Obamacare. Now, if you read the classical definition of socialism in Merriam-Webster, it says a theory of social organization based on government ownership, management, or control of the means of production and the distribution and exchange of goods. So in classical 100% socialism, that is true. The government owns the businesses, as is going on in some of the South American banana republics, where they're seizing what was once private enterprise. That is classic gangster socialism of the type practiced today probably only in Cuba and North Korea, maybe a few other places that I'm not familiar with. That's gangster socialism of the type that has destroyed societies and people for well over 100 years. But if you look at China's socialism, what you find is something different. The government doesn't own, manage, and control production and distribution of goods. They have opened up the markets to free markets in China. What the government does is control the people through a centralized power structure. The people live in a prison camp, basically, in China. So they have more freedom in terms of their commerce than we do. I don't know if you know that. I know people who have gone and worked in China and own businesses there. They have the equivalent of a Wild West. They have what's called a free market economy in China. We don't. And then you could also argue, for example, that Obama's socialist government does, in fact, if it doesn't own the businesses that you run, it certainly manages and controls your means of production and your means of distribution and exchange of goods through the onerous regulations that the Lilliputians called bureaucrats impose upon us. But I don't want to get stuck on that. No, Obama's not really a socialist in that regard. He's worse than a European socialist today. Why? Because he runs a secretive, centralized government. European socialists today could never get away with his crimes against the American people. You see, in Europe, they are not hamstrung with white guilt. You see, in Europe, they're not hamstrung with a two-party system where there's no democracy whatsoever. You see, in Europe, many of the countries have parliamentary systems of government, which give the people numerous political parties to choose from, and, most importantly, an opportunity to dismiss a rogue, corrupt, incompetent regime. I will say no more. Somebody told me 20 years ago that radio is considered the bastard child of the entertainment medium, and it's still known as that, but that's how it's looked upon by the power brokers or the people who make the money off it. It's sneered at. But from the performer's point of view, talk radio is the most electrifying of all mediums. You ask anybody. So, Joan, you're my producer for a night on WABC. Go ahead. Be my producer. What would you recommend?
You have to look at it this way. You're coming back home to your roots, back to New York. When you talk about things that happened to you in your childhood, it's funny and it's comforting, and there's millions of baby boomers that can relate to the experiences that you talk about. And it's so entertaining. I loved hearing about your mother cooking. You made me laugh. Sometimes you make me want to cry. I'm so happy you're coming back home. You can
That's beautiful. No, that's a very beautiful statement. It's absolutely 1,000% true. In other words, my show is national. I've lived in San Francisco, remember, since 1974. You know how long that is already? Do the math. I don't even want to do the math. It depresses me to do the math. But I've been here since 1974, off and on. But, you know, I never really left New York. I don't go there that often. Once my mother passed away, I never really went back. My publishers are in New York. In fact, my new publisher, God bless her, came out to see me. I had dinner with her Sunday night. I saw her for lunch yesterday. She's as Manhattan as they come. And actually, I have a bigger New York accent than she does. I said to her, how come you don't have a New York accent if you're born in Manhattan? She said, I don't know. It's bizarre.
I'm telling you, it sounds like you live right next door. I mean, don't lose it. It's precious.
No, I can't. I had the opportunity to hide myself in that way years ago. When I started in radio, they said, oh, he's too New York. He'll never make it. Well, I guess they were wrong. But the thing is, whatever. I mean, what's the point of hiding your accent? Boy, what are you going to get out of it?
Nope.
What do I want to sound like? I almost use the word. I can't. It's a bad word in Italian. I'll say a schnook. That's not the word. It begins with a S, but it doesn't end with that. I don't want to sound like a schnook from Nowhereville. Thanks for the call. So she's saying don't change.
On the only conservative station in the Bay Area, Hot Talk 560 KSFO.
Glue your liberal friends to a chair and make them listen to the Savage Nation Thanksgiving edition, where we put together some of the best moments of this show for you while you digest all of that tryptophan from the turkey. A while ago, I received by email from an unknown listener named, I'll tell you who he is, a thing called the Found Poetry of Dr. Michael Savage. I had no idea what it was. And he says, these are the found poems of American talk show host and writer Dr. Michael Savage, as edited by American artist and musician Sam Gundell. According to Encyclopedia Britannica, a found poem is one consisting of words found in a non-poetic context and usually broken into lines that convey a verse rhythm. The editor has taken measures to preserve the undeniable quality of Dr. Savage's language and claims no rights to the work. He, the editor, has merely acted to frame language as art, offering various topics as explored by Savage, but through an explicitly poetic lens. The editor hopes that the reader will begin to recognize a common thread weaving through this body of poems, and that he, the reader, will remember that what follows is, quote, one man's opinion, an opinion that is sharp, humorous, and most importantly, human. Then I open it up, and I see a contents page, 48 pages of stuff I don't even remember saying, broken into lines laid out by poems. So I call this guy up, and it turns out he's a sax player and a good one, really good one. And I say, Sam, this is great. Let's collaborate. He's 26. I'm older than 26. And there's a magic on the phone. And I said, Sam, cut some music for these pieces. I'll play them on the show. Here's a piece he found that I did a while ago called Diplomat. And this was me talking about John Kerry not too long ago. I had no idea he would turn it into this verse for my words. So let's hear Sam Gundell's saxophone, and I'll try to read it as a backup. Go ahead. The perfect suit, the watch, the wedding ring, the manicure, the hand usage, the eyebrows, the use of the hands, the watch, the wedding ring, the skilled performance of the professional, how impressed he is with himself. My, does he love himself, the sound of his own voice. My, does he love watching himself hold court before the world and those hands. I guess Teddy didn't like it. He started to bark. I don't know what that means. Okay, Teddy, we'll kill that one. No, that's Teddy in the background of the studio. This is live radio. I mean, I'm taking you into the performance here. We're rehearsing. So I'll do one more. Mothers. He loved mothers. Hold it. I got to find mothers. Mothers is on page 12. Hold on, guys. Page 12. Sam's music is behind me. Line 12, mothers, 13 seconds. Title. Okay, go with mothers. Go with mothers. In my day, if there was an entertainer, the first thing the mothers would say was that he was a family man and would never cheat on his wife. The women cared about that in those days. They would be in the kitchen, moving around the breadcrumbs with the serrated knife on the oilcloth tablecloth. The women would talk, and I don't know why, but I was always in the dining room, listening to what the wise women were saying. They would sift the crumbs with their serrated bread knives, and by the time the coffee hour was over, and those women got through talking, and the crumbs were very finely sifted, they had resolved all the personal problems in their lives, and all of the world's problems, and I felt the world was a good place to live in. Now that's, this young man cut those original sounds for me and sent them to me by MP3, and we put them together with my voice live just now, never done before. And I'd like to have Sam on the show for a few minutes to talk about this collaboration before we go back to what we were doing. Could anyone dial up Sam or we get him on the show for a minute or two? It's okay, you can take your time with it, because I got to tell you what happened. My guys transferred his MP3 into a CD. So I threw it on the table with my old stereo, and I plugged it into this 5-disc changer that I have. This old Sony must be 20 years old. And I've only been playing jazz from the Blue Note series. So I put it in, and I started to try to find it. And it was so good, I said, why? What do you mean? There's words on it. I thought it was the Blue Note. I thought he was like Miles. I didn't know who he was. I didn't know it was him. But he had read my words over his music. He's professionally excellent. He's a real talented artist. And I want to have him on the show if we can get him for a minute or two so we can talk a little bit about where I'm going to go with this and what he thinks as a young listener talk radio is all about, because he grew up on this show. He'll tell you that story if we can find it. If not, we'll do it another time. Let's take some callers while we're waiting for Sam. Pat on WFTL in Florida. Go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
How are you doing, Michael?
Good, Pat. What would you recommend?
If I were going to be your producer, I wouldn't change anything. You're a one-man variety show.
It's true. I got the hat. I got the trumpet. I got the tap dancing shoes. I got the cane. I got the dog. It does feel like that. It's like every night I got to come out and do a show. It's unbelievable. It's a one-man show. It really is. It's very hard, Pat.
Well, I can understand, but it's a one-man variety show for intelligent people, too. I might want
to... Yeah, well, that's the truth. I'm trying to be the Pied Piper of America. Let's put it that way. The Pied Piper of Borders, Language, and Culture. Does that say it all?
That I don't see how you can offend anybody.
Well, I can't offend anybody who loves the country. And those I offend ought to move with Harvey Weinstein to the Ukraine. Thanks for the call. Let him go back to his roots. Let Harvey go back to his roots. Well, as promised, the young man who, Sam Gendel, is listening. He's the saxophone player. Sam, thanks for joining us on the Savage Nation.
Grooving, Dr. Savage.
So, Sam, tell the audience, if you don't mind, in a short version, how you started listening to the show when you were a kid.
My dad and mom would play you in the car going to school on vacations, you know, and I'd have to listen to you. So I just started, and that was all I knew. And then little by little, I started to pay attention as I grew older, and I said, oh, there's something to this. And then I got into jazz, of course, and then it made sense with the jazz for some reason. Your voice and the rhythm of your speech and the language, it all made sense all of a sudden with the jazz. I said, ah, now I see. Okay. And then, you know, that's the story.
So, Sam, just a quick note without giving anything away. You grew up, as I understand, in a small California ranching town.
Yeah, it's a small agricultural town in Central California.
Oh, that's very unusual, because one would say, how does a guy like that become a saxophone player in Los Angeles playing nightclubs? I mean, because if someone saw you, they'd say, he's a hipster. Would you identify? I mean, that's how they would identify you in the broad stroke. Is that correct?
I don't know about me, because that comes with a certain way of speaking and dress, which I don't have either of. I came to L.A. to actually, you know, study music, but also I was in a medical program in college, studying to be a, you know, go to medical school. And then I quickly left that after I saw what was going on.
Well, you better not tell Obama that, because he's liable to put out something called Music Care, where he takes over the music industry. He says, you know, everyone's entitled to music. And it's unfair for some people to get music and some not to get music. So we're creating Music Care, and we'll be disseminating music across the nation run out of the White House. Unfortunately, our website won't be ready until the year 2053. So, Sam, you make your living now by performing in small jazz clubs around L.A., is that correct?
Yeah, in L.A. I also tour. I've played in Europe, Japan. You know, I tour as well, so... Yeah.
All right, but look, Sam, I'm not just blowing smoke. When I heard your music, you don't know if a person's going to be good or bad. And when I got your tapes, I said I'm afraid to listen to them because I was afraid of being disappointed. But you are really at the top of the rung here. Are you classically trained in music?
Not really. I'm mostly self-taught because I grew up in a small town. But I had the best teachers. I had records. My dad he's not a musician, but he's an aficionado. And he turned me on to Lester Young, Coltrane, Miles Davis. I mean, all the greats. Like, from a, you know, when he saw that I was interested, he never pushed on me. But when he saw that I was interested, he said, you know, you're interested? Check these guys out. And I said, whoa, okay, there it is.
But, Sam, how did you capture these little things in this book? What was the process? What did you do to grab these radio poems?
This is just the way I hear you. You know, you speak, this is what's happening in my mind. In the same way that you articulate the architecture of your mind with your voice and a microphone in front of a green curtain night after night, that's the way, you know, all I did was merely articulate the architecture of my mind on a page. Simple as that. So, I mean,
But are all of these words my words, or did you change them?
They're all your words. No, they're all your words. It's your language. I mean, there are things omitted for the sake of poetry and for the page.
Ah, so that's why they read the way they read. You cut out some of the verbiage to make them more tightly conform to the concept of, as you say, the found poetry.
Yeah, because poetry, I see poetry as a distillation of the language. You know, it's like a shot of tequila, you know.
That's well done. That's well done. That's well done. Distillation. Poetry is the distillation of language. I like that. You know, Sam, I began as a poet. People don't know that. I began as a poet in the East Village of New York City way back when I was an unknown social worker. I mean, who wasn't a poet? I had no recognition whatsoever. I thought some of the things I wrote were interesting, but no one ever, you know, published them or knew anything about them. And, you know, I evolved, but I never stopped writing, and I evolved into all the other things I've done. But as I've gotten to this stage now, and I've climbed now to the pinnacle of where I am going to be, I decided to take a risk tonight, Sam, and reintroduce that which I started with, but in this sense, from the political poetry, political poetic point of view, with your editing and your music. And I think most of what you captured here is almost 100% political, isn't it?
I would say so, yeah.
Like here, Poseurs. I mean, I'm looking for political. Oh, I love this one, Sam. Get out your saxophone. Here's a great one, The Dining Room. It was such a small dining room that you risked castration. If you didn't bend back as you were passing a chair, you were constantly having to contort. Then you'd hit your head against the woman's sprayed hair. It was crazy and wonderful in that tiny dining room.
That's what it comes down to, right? Just the family.
Yeah, but I mean, is that political, or what is that? That's not really political.
We'll have to let everyone figure that out. I mean, that's just the family.
Yeah, and family is quite political today, isn't it?
I guess, but that's the beauty of it, is that you always come back to family, which is the most empirical political unit that we have since the beginning of time. You know, in a case.
Sam, how would you, as a 26-year-old jazz musician in Los Angeles, define yourself politically?
Oh.
Well, wait a minute. Don't say it, because I want you to continue performing as a jazz musician in Los Angeles. let's leave it at that. I mean, I really don't want to put you into a pigeonhole any more than you did with me. You didn't put me in a pigeonhole here, because most of these selections, in my opinion, are somewhat almost apolitical. Here, look, here's one, Sam. Remember this one, The Will to Go On?
Oh, yeah.
Neil, can you play any of his music, and I'll read The Will to Go On. It's five lines. A half-crushed ant, it crawls, still wanting to live, by instinct, survival unto itself, a reason to carry on. Pick that out of the cacophony of radio all day long, Sam, and your own life, your own thoughts, your own headspace to deal with. How would you pick something out like that out of the avalanche of words that come at you, not only from my show, but from all the other things you hear all day? How do you catch that?
I mean, to tell you the truth, I think that's a question for the man upstairs, because I've thought about that time and time again, and I have three new poems on my desktop just from a few days ago of yours, that it's just, they just come out. It's just the way I hear you, and it's just the way I hear the world, I guess. I mean, it's not just you, it's the way I walk down the street, and that's what I see and think, you know, it's just the way I am, just like you are.
Sam, how can my many, many loyal listeners who love me and now are going to love you, how can they find you? What's your website? Where can they go and find your stuff?
They just go to my website, samgendel.com, my last name, G-E-N-D-E-L. And I have a Facebook page, you know, I have all that, but my website...
Well, I want them to go and buy your CDs and hear what a great musician you are. And we'll have you on again, Sam, from time to time. We'll put it on my website, Sam. We'll do whatever we can, because I have found my Boswell. Sam Gendel, thanks a million for listening. And we'll be right back on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
This is a performance. Radio is a performance. And yes, you know my politics. The politics are the core of my performance, not an addendum to my politics. But that doesn't mean, okay, it's like the old thing, if you read psychology when you were young, if you went to college, you read something about set and frame. It was very early teachings in psychology. What is set and what is frame? In a situation or in a conversation, there's a set and a frame. So that's an interesting thing to say. In other words, you could put politics out front and do that day and night. Fine. Some do it. They do it well. I don't. It's already in the air, the turkey thing. There's no getting around it. The mind is already moving already to the turkey. I myself am distracted. I have three conflicts every Thanksgiving. Should I cook at home, or should I go to a restaurant for Thanksgiving? Should I invite other people outside the family, or should I not invite them? Should I? On one hand, I want to stay home and cook because I like the smell of the turkey in the house. It permeates the curtains. Makes it smell like a ghetto, which is, I kind of like it, like a slummy. It reminds me of like a slum apartment. Not a dirty, don't confuse a slum apartment with something dirty. Our apartment was immaculate, but it was in a slum when I was a kid. But when I grew up, I always liked the whole thing. The little house in Queens where the brick house attached. It reminded me very much of a house out of Dickens, England, you know, the attached homes in Queens, New York. Starter homes. Father paid $14,500 for it in the early 50s. It was fine for us. Three bedrooms, one bathroom, horrible. Oh, man. That part I didn't like. I don't want to go into it. You got, you know, two, three children and a set of adults in one bathroom. You don't want to know about that. How did people live like this? Like from another world. They had one little bathroom downstairs, like it was called the guest bathroom. You couldn't get in that thing. You couldn't move in. It was, and the dining room, I've said this before, dining room, but it was, my mother would put out a spread for Thanksgiving. I remember to this day how great it was. She'd cook all day with the ants over. It was beautiful. A little four-burner stove with electric. How did she do it? There was no, she was afraid of gas, I think. She had certain phobias, God rest. I don't want to divulge. She was afraid of gas, as they had electric, but she could turn out better than a kitchen. Now everyone has Gagano in Tiburon, California. Oh, yeah, there were $12,000 stoves that no one has ever turned on. Six of those refrigerators in the house, six. You open one, it's got cold drinks in it. The main one for the house, oh, subs. Everyone has a Sub-Zero, right? They have Sub-Zero, you open it up, it looks like a prostitute's refrigerator. It's got a bottle of water in it and a bottle of cold wine, nothing to eat. And then the stove, 12 burners, cook special things you touch, contraptions that can rotisserie. No one's ever turned it on. My mother had an electric stove with four grids on it. She could make six restaurant meals at one time. And if you open the refrigerator, there were meals ready to be reheated. She had no microwave in the house. That was a later addition. She thought it was no good. It would ruin the food. She'd heat on the stove the old way. So, you know, Thanksgiving always has those memories for me. She had appetizers. Now, I'll tell you why. You came in her house for Thanksgiving dinner or any other dinner. All over the living room, spread on every table, was something to dip into. A chopped chicken liver, or this, a fish, or that, a cracker, a drink. Because she didn't want to, like, think that people were waiting. I once went to a wedding out here in Marin County years ago. Nice people. No negatives intended. It was so high class that there was no food served for 2 hours. I've never seen anything like it. There was not a nut. Nothing. There were only alcoholic drinks. Nobody could believe this. They were fainting.
Warning. The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage. This is an encore presentation of The Savage Nation.
It's The Savage Nation Thanksgiving Edition. Here we have collected some of the greatest hits from our show to share with you on this holiday with your family. Now let's check out this great moment from the Savage Nation. The gangsters in the medical pharmaceutical industry, the criminals, the medical pharmaceutical mafia, who are more dangerous than a crack dealer. Now don't get me wrong, not all modern medicines are evil. I mean, I have some antibiotic cream on my hand that, thank God, it exists. I couldn't cure it with a vitamin. Something happened, I got an infection on my hand, and I think it's special cream, whatever. The dermatologist, though, and sent them by the iPhone picture, sent me a screw doing the picture, and so it's curing it a little bit. I love it. I love modern medicine. It takes hundreds of millions of dollars to design and to get a new drug approved. An NDA is one of the most difficult things in the world to get. Don't tell that to the communists. They'll tell you that the drug company should create the drug for nothing. Yeah, how many drugs has Cuba created since Castro took over? Can anyone list the inventions and the patents that have been filed by Cubans in Cuba? I don't think it would fill the New York telephone book, the list. It might fill the telephone book for a certain town in Alaska where there's a zero population. So anyway, what I'm saying to you is now the medical pharmaceutical mafia comes out the other day and says, we're going to double the number of people who should be on statins, the anti-cholesterol class of drugs. And now they're going to broaden it to an extent where virtually everybody should be on a statin drug. Why? Not because it makes sense. Not because there are no side effects. It's because of profit. It's a profit-driven decision, as everything in America seems to be today. These new so-called guidelines, which are criminal, would double the number of Americans on cholesterol-lowering drugs. You hear? So I ask you a question. Why? No, I'm not going to ask you why they did it. It's for profit. There's no other reason. There's no other reason. The new advice says that anyone with type 1 or type 2 diabetes, regardless of whether they have additional heart disease risk factors, should take statins. They say that anybody who has this and that, a heart disease risk, blah, 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 should take statins. They're not telling them to lower their intake of cholesterol. They're not telling them to stop eating saturated fats and sugar and to stop smoking and to start exercising. They're saying just take the magic pill. Now, I will tell you right now, there are serious side effects to statins. I have the most upside-down lipid profile in America. Nobody who's not had a heart attack could have an upside-down lipid profile as I do. It's the worst you've ever seen. The wrong LDL, the wrong HDL, the wrong triglycerides, the wrong LDLL, the wrong HEHEL, the wrong low-low, the wrong high-high. It's all upside down. And if any one of these cardiologists looked at it, I should have been dead 15 years ago. But, I'm lucky. But B, I also take mega doses of ascorbic acid, meaning vitamin C, for 30 years. Mega doses of vitamin E, but the right vitamin E, not the garbage that they used in the flawed study at the mayonnaise clinic. I take mixed tocopherols that cost a lot of money. I take massive doses of B vitamins. I know what to take, and I've been very fortunate. I also watch what I eat. So I tried statins, and I could hardly walk. I became almost crippled. I want to ask you a question on the Savage Nation. Because I watch my health my entire life, and I should be punished now by Obama. I should pay for a degenerate smoker. I should pay for an injection drug user. I should pay for an idiot who's giving himself lung cancer by smoking marijuana. I don't want to pay for them. Screw them. Let them pay for their lifestyle. I should pay for a man who sleeps with 50 people a week. Let him pay for his STD treatment, not me. That's how I feel. You go pay for your own liver transplant if you drank like a fool. Or you took Tylenol and alcohol for 30 years. Go blame the drug companies and the alcohol companies. Don't make me pay for your idiocy. So what I'm saying is, I'm not going to take statins because the side effects are overwhelming. So I want to hear statin horror stories in the Savage Nation. Whatever my audience numbers may be, it will go out to the world. Statin side effects horror stories from the Savage Nation. I am into the natural lifestyle as best I can. I'm not a perfectionist. I'm not a fanatic. Yesterday I had a lamb shank. I didn't want it, but I ate it because the fish came from China. And I'd rather have a lamb shank from New Zealand than calamari from China. Let's put it. It was like a calculated risk. Everything I eat is a calculated risk. Imagine living like I do. Well, that's how I live. Everything I do, I calculate. Should I eat this? Should I drink that? If I drink that, I'll get a hangover. I don't hardly drink alcohol anyway. People say, oh, you love wine. I don't drink wine. I don't hardly drink wine. It gives me a headache. I just hardly drink it. No matter how expensive it is, I get a migraine from it. I can't drink it. So I hardly drink. Why? Well, now the drug company would say, there now. You can drink. Just take a powerful pain reliever when you drink. Why don't you just take some Tylenol before you drink? Why, that would mitigate against the headache that you might get afterwards. Yeah, it would, definitely. It would also increase my risk of a liver collapse and a need for a liver transplant and possibly a kidney collapse and then a need for kidneys. So no, I'm not going to take Tylenol while I drink. I'm not a fool. I understand the chemistry involved in that. You're lying to the people to tell them to do a thing like that. The liver can't take but only a certain amount of assault per day. So if you assault it two or three times at the same time with toxic substances like alcohol and Tylenol or alcohol and aspirin, you're overpowering the kidney's ability to deal with it. It's only a poor little package of protoplasm. Has a huge job in America. That kidney has a lot of work to do every day. That liver has an awful lot of work to do. You go to China, do you realize you have a mythology about Chinese? You think, oh, they're so long-lived. Oh, look at them. They lived to the age of Confucius. We should follow the Chinese. I'm a Buddhist and I eat soybean. Idiots, morons, have no idea what the health the longevity issues are in China. No idea, morons. They think they've got a statue of a fat guy with beads on his neck, that they're Buddhists. They stick it in their living room on the Upper East Side. They spend $25,000 for a charcoal Buddha. And they say, well, what's your religion? Oh, I'm a Buddha. Really? Not great. Oh, you're Buddhist. That's so cool. What does that mean? I don't know, but I'm a Buddhist. The real Buddhists laugh at them. They mock them, the American fake Buddhist. Everything in America is like ersatz Buddhism. So anyway, to get back to it, so the thing is, you know what the health profile is of the Chinese male in China is? Do you know that hepatitis is endemic in China because of poor hygiene? Do you understand? In the whole food chain? And do you know that liver cancer is epidemic in China? It's astounding. It really is. That's why I'd rather talk about a 3-hydroxy-3-methylglutaryl coenzyme A reductase inhibitor, lovastatin, than what Obama said. I know more about a 3-hydroxy-3-methylglutaryl coenzyme A reductase inhibitor. I can tell you more about it than I can tell you about what Obama said today. I like that statement. It made me happy. I was able to use my doctoral training once in the last 10 years just now by using a long chemical word. I used to love these words. They thrilled me. I got a thrill out of even looking at them and then looking at the formulas and then looking at the organic structure. I always loved organic chemistry. They were geniuses in that field. I was not one of them. You know, if I was better in chemistry, I would be a chemist today. I just would be a different person. They're hidden geniuses, chemists. One of the least sung professions is chemistry. One of my all-time great heroes is Linus Pauling, one of the great geniuses of medicine. And Linus Pauling was originally, he went into chemistry, he said, because the reason he chose chemistry, he says, because at least I could determine what is real and what is false. In other words, it's the closest we could come as human beings to determine true from false is in the chemistry laboratory. That's why he went into it. As I always loved that man's brain. Now, he's too liberal, you know, politically, but I didn't care. Bertrand Russell, one of the greatest geniuses of all time, was a super left-winger and a socialist, but so what? He was a great genius in his fields, in mathematics. If you read Principia Mathematica, which I struggled through, you can understand what I'm talking about. You can't wipe out a man's entire life because of his politics. Then you become what? What does that make you? If you wipe out a man's entire life because you don't like his politics, what does that make you? A closed-minded bigot. Many people hate me. They don't know me. They heard I'm a right-winger. So they wipe out 28 books and all of the good I've done for the world because they're bigots. They're small-minded bigots. That's why I say I'd rather say the words 3-hydroxy-3-methylglutaryl coenzyme A reductase inhibitor than Barack Obama. I'd be happier. I'd live longer. So now we have a moron at MIT named Jonathan Gruber. Listen to the clip again. You got to listen to this.
We currently have a highly discriminatory system where if you're sick, if you've been sick, if you're going to get sick, you cannot get health insurance. The only way to end that discriminatory system is to bring everyone into the system and pay one fair price. That means that the genetic winners, the lottery winners, who'd been paying an artificially low price because of this discrimination, now will have to pay more.
You understand how twisted this is, don't you? You understand what a twisted sister this character is. You know where the word bullying is coming from, don't you? From bullies. You watch and see. Whoever talks about bullying is bullying you into listening to their rubbish about bullying. Now you have the same type of mentality here of this twisted sister, in my opinion, saying that this is a discriminatory system, that if you're not sick, you should pay more. And if you are sick, you should pay less. If you've kept yourself healthy, you should pay more. If you've lived like a pig in a slob and you're diseased, you should pay nothing. If you like your doctor, screw you, you can't keep your doctor. If you hate your doctor, good, we'll make sure you keep your doctor. It's Alice in Wonderland. It's upside down under these people. They're mentally insane. Liberalism is a mental disorder. Liberalism is a mental disorder. So I'm talking about something a little different, state and side effects. Because now the drug industry, along with the doctor industry, has conspired to get together to peddle the class called statins to more and more people. Now, the evidence is not supportive that it will reduce the risk of heart attack. You ask legitimate cardiologists who are honest, and they will tell you that if you've had a heart attack, yes, it will reduce the risk of death and another heart attack. That is true. But if you've not had a heart attack, there's no evidence whatsoever that it reduces the risk of the first heart attack. To this day, there isn't. I've read the literature. Show me a study that shows the opposite. I'll change my mind. I'm open-minded. I'm trained in science, which means I'm open on this subject. I still wouldn't take statins. Even if, God forbid, I got a heart attack, which is inevitable one day, unless I die of something else first. It's inevitable. Look, you know, I had an Italian doctor friend once. He was so philosophically wonderful. Anyways, we were all in natural medicine 20 years ago. Everybody was into it. The guy was great. MD, wonderful guy. So very often we'd go out for pizza afterwards and drink beer and eat pizza. We had a lot. It was a great days of the orthomolecular world, and I love those days. And he laughed. He said, look, Michael, he said, let me tell you something. He said, you're either going to die of a heart attack. The statistics are that all of us are either going to die of a heart attack or cancer. So he said, can't you enjoy yourself a little bit in life? I mean, give it up a little bit. And then he said, you know, my parents have been married for 70 years. They were like 95 years old. And he said they would argue like magpies all day long. Italian people. Yap, yap, yap. Bicker, 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 bicker. And he said, but they never took it into the bedroom with them. He said they've been married 70 years. That was one of the nicest nights I've ever had, and the pizza was wonderful. So the point I'm making is there's only so much I'm personally willing to do to sustain my health. But I have done so for a long period of time. Watched my food, eaten vitamins, exercise, don't indulge in certain behaviors. Temptation is everywhere. So don't you think I should be rewarded by paying a lower health premium than someone who hasn't indulged themselves, lived like a pig and an animal, lived worse than a pig or an animal, slept with 50 people a week, gets an STD or worse, and I should pay for that event? That's right. That's the Obama way. I'll be right back on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Brian in San Luis Obispo on the internet calling the Savage Nation. You're a nurse. Go ahead, please, with Staten horror stories.
Yeah, I had the opportunity to see one of the worst side effects, the absolute worst one. It's called rhabdomyolysis. Myelosis means the lysing or breaking up of cells. Those cramps that you feel are actually your muscle tissue being broken down. We had a patient once that was complaining of severe thigh cramping and calf cramping to the point where he was in a fetal position. And we brought him into the emergency room, brought him down into the ER. So they started massaging, trying to straighten out his legs. I took him to the bathroom to help him pee, and then he peed what looked literally like pureed top round.
Oh, my God. He was peeing out his protein?
He was peeing out the elements of his muscle tissues that were...
Yes, he was peeing out the break. His muscles were so broken down that it was coming out of his urine?
Your body filters the broken muscle tissue when you have the acute rhabdomyolysis, when you have the more aggressive form that you experienced, a very mild form of it with your muscle cramping. When he experienced it, it was a complete breakdown, and the big problem there is that all the pieces and fragments of your muscle tissues will block your kidneys, and then you'll go into kidney failure because they can't get blood. So you got to get to an emergency room right away so they can get a bolus of...
Well, let me ask, you're talking about an extreme example of a side effect of statin use. Was this the first dose or a continuous dose?
This was a continuous dose along with polypharmacy, other medications. He had severe psychosis, So he wasn't able to express the buildup of pain or
Oh, so he kept taking the drug without telling the doctor what he was feeling, and they didn't know. What about elevated levels of CPK, creatinine, kinase, muscle enzyme? Did you see any increased CPK?
His enzymes were he was in a great deal of trouble, and so they were able to combat that, and they took him off. Here's one thing though that I believe, I'm making a prediction here from seeing long term use of statins. I believe that you're going to see irreversible muscle atrophy. You're going to see men in their 70s that look like they're in their 90s or 100s because of the statin use. Your body harvests the cholesterol from your cells in order to satisfy the body's absolute need for cholesterol. It's not a bad thing. It's just too much.
Absolutely. Cholesterol is a precursor to many important hormones.
This is an encore presentation of The Savage Nation.
You are in the Thanksgiving edition of The Savage Nation. And here are some of the best moments from recent shows for you on this Thanksgiving Day. Enjoy it. I didn't finish the chiropractor story. I have to finish it. The first rule of radio, which I learned the first 3 days in the business 20 years ago, is that if you start a story, you must finish it. If you promise something, you got to deliver on it in the next segment. To make a long story short, some family members like chiropractic. I don't like with the bone cracking. I always feared a broken neck because I knew a doctor whose father was killed by a chiropractor. Well, he swore he went in on a cold night in Kansas, and the father, you know, died on the table. They said, oh, heart attack, but he says he thinks the chiropractor broke his neck. So I don't let anyone manipulate my neck, my spine, nothing. They're my bones, they're not yours. You know, it's like our bodies, ourselves. In that sense, it's my bones, myself. If my bone hurts, it's my business. Leave me alone. That's okay, you want, it works, but it worked for family members. Don't get me wrong. This is a very controversial thing I'm saying. They were cured in many cases. They've avoided surgery. They've been able to avoid the quacks at Stanford who right away cut, burn, and poison through chiropractic. But I was talked into it. He said, okay, just let him do this. I said, okay, but no popping, no touching of the neck. Here are the rules. No neck touching, no spinal manipulation. No, it'll be soft. He'll adjust the leg. And I said, all right, fine. So I fly to L.A. I drive out to the valley about an hour to the miracle worker. It starts out again nice. They all start out the same way. You say gentle, okay. You say no neck, okay. You say no back, okay. The next thing I know, like, oh, I think I'm being torn to pieces. He's yanking my leg. He's twisting my pelvic girdle. He's telling me he's releasing muscles that I didn't even know existed. And believe me, I studied anatomy. I had no idea there were muscles in the pelvic girdle where he was. For 4 weeks now, I feel like I'm crippled. So between the neck and the back, I thought I was finished in life. But okay, I got better. I woke up better. The last few days, I've been healed. I don't know why. I just decided I couldn't live with it anymore. So I was talking about that. Nothing. It's not a profound story. There's no punchline with a ha-ha. I'm just telling you what's going on in my head right now. Why I'm questioning God. Because it wasn't God who healed my pelvic girdle. It wasn't God who almost snapped my neck. It wasn't God who did that. It was a crackpot masseuse, number one. So remember I was telling you that in the Fiji Islands, the colonialist friend, he was a wonderful man, by the way. He was a parasitologist. I love this guy. Originally from Brooklyn, but he affected over the years a British... He liked English. He was an Anglophile. He had gone to the London School of Economics, and then he went to the great tropical... schools of tropical medicine when it really, really was a great field. Doug, see, he affected the whole British colonialist thing, not because he wanted to, you know, but he just loved them. So he got the pipe. He was an older guy. I mean, and he's a brilliant, brilliant writer. And I love the guy. He was like a mentor of mine. I thought he was so great. He introduced me to Chinese, Thai food. I never knew what it was. It was like overly spiced Chinese. What did I know from Queens? We ate crispy noodles that killed half the men in Queens. Between the pastrami sandwiches and the bad noodles in the Chinese restaurants on Union Turnpike, the men didn't stand a chance. No, look at the grave markers. You look at the grave markers running from Queens out to Nassau, Suffolk. Take a look at the ages, 49, 50, 51. Yeah, that's because they knew an awful lot about nutrition and health. Listen to the morons. Eat chicken fat. Eat schmaltz. put fat in your throat, smoke, it's good for you, don't worry so much. It's a liberal thing. It's a liberal thing to take care of yourself. Be a real conservative. Drop dead at 39. Oh, I listen to this. I can't believe what I'm hearing. Like Neanderthals. So it was those crispy things that you threw in the soup. What garbage. Nah, they died from that stuff. So, but look, I'm not putting down all chiropractors. Come on, Larry, don't take it personally. Some people are good chiropractors. Come on, it's not meant to be personalized. But I was telling you, I meant to get to... So my friend, the parasitologist, I won't mention him, he died a few years ago. I loved the man. I lost contact with him. He was a bit snotty, too, and arrogant, by the way. No one's perfect. You say, oh, I loved him. You talk about a friend. Yeah, well, there were moments I didn't love him so much. There's an arrogance in him. You know, he affected the British a little too much. The little of the Anglophilia got to him, and he started to get really snotty. That part I didn't like. I liked the Brooklyn in him more than I liked the English in him. So I was telling you, he told me that in the old days, the colonialists would feed the turkeys vodka, right, right, right? I swear to God, I just opened up Fox News. Tipsy turkeys, New Hampshire birds fed beer for flavor and size. When it comes to pairing beer with poultry, Joe Moret isn't too fussy. His turkeys will drink, but Moret is raising turkeys and has been giving his birds beer since 1993. When he and his workers popped open a few cans after work on a hot July day, a turkey knocked one over and started drinking, he said, and they've been sipping the suds ever since. He says that the lager makes birds fatter, more flavorful, and juicier. Well, look what it's done for Germany. Oh, yeah, it's noticeable, he said. It's not a strong, gamey flavor. It's a nice turkey flavor. And the people love it. The gravy is darker and tastier from the turkeys that drink beer. Now enters PETA. The wackos enter. That's their business now. The animal nut group, PETA, said turkeys shouldn't be fed beer. I don't know. Who cares what they say? But a poultry expert with the University of New Hampshire Cooperative Center said it's unlikely the birds have suffered. Hey, listen, schmucks from PETA. You know I'm against torturing animals. I'm a great guy with animals, but get off your case already, moron. The turkeys are raised to be killed for food. If you get them drunk, they're going to be less frightened, and they're not going to feel pain, as much pain as they would if they weren't drunk. So, morons, there's a certain limit to your idiocy. Your fanaticism has to have some common sense, doesn't it? Whatever. Kathy Brock, National Director of Humane Heartland, which oversees the treatment of farm animals, said that standards from the American Humane Society don't prohibit serving beer to animals. Oh, good. I consulted with an avian veterinarian who said that while giving beer to turkeys is not a standard protocol, hops could be beneficial for the intestinal tract. You see that? Moret's turkeys are not the first animals to consume alcohol. Japanese farmers have been sent to feed cattle beer to stimulate their appetites, and a winemaker and farmer in the south of France have experimented with feeding cows the remainders of pressed grapes. Sounds like North Beach. To produce meat they've dubbed Vinboven. That stuff is the worst garbage I ever drank in my life, what they drink in the Italian restaurants. That grappa. I hate it. It's the most carcinogenic drink I've ever put near my mouth. It smells like nail polish. Why would anyone drink grappa? Why is that an Italian thing? What is this? You got to understand where the origins of grappa, as far as I know, and correct me if I'm mistaken, let's say you're an Italian who drinks a lot of grappa. You're killing yourself, number one. I have nothing against wine. But grappa, do you know what grappa is made from? It's the dregs of the vat that is fermented. So how could that not be filled with carcinogenic fusel oils? The dregs of the vat would contain more fusel oils than any other grape-related product. So if you're drinking grappa... I mean, I remember I'd sit in restaurants sometimes in the summer with the guys when I was still going there. I don't go there anymore. I'd rather go to a Subway sandwich shop than an Italian restaurant in North Beach lately. Now, nothing against anybody. Not a personal. I'm not nothing against anybody. I've changed. I'd rather get a foot long than get a, I can't, it's a family show. I'd rather get a foot long in Subway than go and get, you know what, in one of the, I don't want it anymore. But I would sit outside on some summer nights that were Fellini-esque in North Beach with some guys, and they bring out the grappa. I'd have to leave. The combo between a cigar and grappa was enough to kill anybody. Nobody's body can take that. Say, well, they did it in the old country. How'd that work out for them? You know, there's a lot of myths about what people did in the old country. The guys who lived the longest in the old country didn't drink grappa and smoke cigars day and night. Some did, yes. But by and large, the human body cannot take that. I tell you that. Just study your epidemiology. But if you're an ignoramus and don't know epidemiology, I can't help you. I don't mean to insult you in any way. If you're an ignoramus, enjoy it. Now, where was God in the Philippines? Where was God in the Philippines? Now, I read, if you read some of the Bible, as I do often on the show, and you know that, I'm not a cynical God-fearing man in that sense. It's like a combo. I'm sort of cynical and God-fearing at the same time. It's like hedging my bet. But Mother Teresa was the same way. You got to understand that. If you read Mother Teresa, she said she questioned God all the time toward the end of her life. You don't want to know that. I admire those who have faith. You know, I like to watch boxing matches, speaking of faith. One of the things that I love about boxing matches is the faith that the fighters have. And, you know, usually after the fight, they'll ask the fighter why he won, and they'll often say it's because of Jesus or God, and they cut him off right away, the slime at HBO. They try to edit it out. The guy's excited, he just knocked the other guy out, broke his nose, killed him, broke his back, whatever. And he says, well, it's because I have faith in God, that's why I won. I used to wonder about that when I was a kid. Before the fight, I would see the two fighters. One would get on his knees on one side of the ring and pray to God, and one would get on his knees on the opposite diagonal side of the ring and pray to God. Now, I figured it was the same God, and they'd both cross themselves and get up and fight, trying to knock the other guy's brains out. And one would win and one would lose. And I wondered, why would God choose one to win and one to lose? I couldn't understand that. But I like the faith. See, that's the part. There's a primitive man in me that enjoys watching that almost animalistic faith in God. I love it. I myself can't feel that. I waver. I read the Bible. I want to believe in the Bible. I find it very interesting from many perspectives, including the fact that there's prophecy in the Bible. But then a part of me is cynical. And I say, I'm looking at the Old Testament. Is it just smart guys who could figure this thing out? You know? Or do they really see the future? It's like Nostradamus, you know? I don't know. Is it God's words? Is it man's words? Don't argue with me over this because we'll now come. But I will put you at ease with something because many of you were asking, why am I doubting God? The answer is because I doubt God after the hurricane in the Philippines. 10,000 people died. I mean, every baby that was killed did something. Why? Why did he kill all of them? I used to ask this with the fighters or a school bus. Let's say a Christian school bus goes off a cliff. 32 Christian children are killed. Why? Why? Why were they killed? Tell me, explain that to me. I can explain it to you. Here is how I can explain it to you. Because I was troubled by this question 40 years ago. I had such a faith-based problem 30 to 40 years ago. I didn't know if I could go forward. And here's what I found. I found a little book written by I forget his name. It was a rabbi, and it was about questioning God. He was not an Orthodox religious rabbi, this one. I think he was sort of a liberal reform type. But he was a bright man, and he wrote a book on exactly the same question, which is how can he believe in God when such horrible things happen on the earth, like a whole 10,000 people wiped out, you know, bringing it down home to today. Let's not go back to history. And he said that he believes God is omnipresent but not omnipotent. What does that mean? God is everywhere, but God doesn't control everything that happens. Now, many of you find that offensive, but I don't believe that God controls everything that happens because I believe in free will. The free will gives you the option to be in a certain place at a certain time. Giving you free will gives you the ability to do good, to do evil, to do right, to do wrong, and establish the equivalent of karma through your actions. But when a tidal wave is approaching your village, and you're on a sandy beach in straw huts, I'm afraid it doesn't matter whether you're the best person in the village or the worst person in the village. You're both going to drown like rats. I'll be right back on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
What kind of nation do we have today that children don't even know they live in a nation? What kind of nation do we have today when children are brainwashed into thinking that America is no good? So instead of teaching children something positive about their country and teaching them to love their country, by teaching them nothing, you're teaching them to disrespect their country. And in that place, they're taught to respect what, the international community? Some imaginary international community? How does that work out for this country? When so many children have nothing to respect, They don't respect themselves. They don't respect the teachers. They don't respect the school. They don't respect the nation. They don't respect their family. Why? Because liberalism has taught you that it's oppressive and judgmental to teach them to, forcibly teach them to respect something. It's judgmental. So look where they are today. So I grew up pledging allegiance to the flag. I did it in elementary school. It didn't hurt me at all. How did it hurt me? I wound up loving the greatest country on earth that my ancestors ran to. And take a look at what we have today. Take a look at the rampant anti-Americanism coming out of the Demon Cat Party. Yet there are people who would argue with me and tell me the opposite is true. So let's hear someone on the opposite side of this discussion, WGWD. Haley in Florida, you're a school board member. Thanks for calling. Tell us why the pledge should not be mandatory.
Well, I'm not saying that, okay, the pledge should not be mandatory. That's the thing. We're not being taught to not love America. That's not what we're being taught at all. You're making very sweeping generalizations. We shouldn't.
So wait a minute. By the pledge, why are you against the pledge? Let's start with that.
The country. We need to be taught the truth. And
Hold it. What truth? Which truth?
The truth.
Which?
There are.
What do you mean? The truth about what? The truth about what?
About what's going on in politics. About the revolving door in Congress with all these businesses. We need to be taught facts, not opinions. Not opinions one way or the other.
Wait, ma'am, you're going all over the place. Are you a school board member?
No, I'm not a school board.
Okay, so whatever you are, you're against the Pledge of Allegiance for what reason, though?
Against it being mandatory. I'm against.
Why? Why? So in other words, making it mandatory not to pledge the allegiance is what you want. That's mandatory, isn't it?
I'm sorry.
What about if a child gets up at graduation and wants to thank God for her success? Isn't it mandatory when you say you can't refer to God? Aren't you imposing something on that child's belief system by making it mandatory that you not refer to God?
Being able to refer to God, that should be okay. Being able, like, not.
Oh, that should be okay. Okay. But pledging allegiance to this nation should not be okay? Why? Why is it wrong to mandate a Pledge of Allegiance?
Because if the child does not feel especially patriotic to America, that's okay.
It's not okay. No, it's not okay. They're sitting here sucking off the system. They should be patriotic towards America. Where do they think it comes from? The air? What do you mean they shouldn't? They should be able to hate America. Where is it written that they should be able to hate America? Why? Why? They're enjoying America. They're getting a free education and free everything else. Where are they getting it from? France?
On the radio, you were just saying earlier how if you spoke out against health insurance, you know, Obama and all these people were going to put you in a mental health institution. You're turning around and saying if you supposedly hate America, you should be put up as a witch or a warlock. Both sides of, you know, what you're criticizing and what you're advocating seem to me to be some cult of ideology.
Yes, I have an ideology. I love America, and I'm proud of it. Yes, I'm not an anti-American, and I'm very proud of it. That's my ideology. I love the country.
You know, a few opinions.
It's not my opinion. It's not my opinion. It's the greatest country on earth. That's why I live here. And if you don't like it, leave the place. Go move where it's better. Go move to China. Why do you stay in America if you hate the country, Haley? You're not telling me why.
Hate the country. I want to see what else is out there. I love.
Oh, you want to see what else is out there? Then go live in China or North Korea for a few months.
Seem very radical. Everything is based on money, and nothing is factual anymore.
Oh, I see. It's the old system. You're a loser, so you think anybody with money is a bad person. They took it from you somehow. Someone who has a better car than you is an evil capitalist.
It's not facts anymore at all.
Haley, you're not going to get anywhere in life by resenting someone who has more things than you have. Haley, do you understand that you're not going to get anything by carrying around this resentment? It doesn't yield anything, Haley. Do you understand it doesn't work? The resentment only breeds hostility within you. You'll never achieve what you're jealous of.
I'm the one being hostile. You're the one villainizing all these people. Humans are humans. We're all
common. That's right. I'm glad to villainize villains. Villains belong in villains should be villainized. That's where the word comes from. You hit the nail on the head. Yes, I'm villainizing anti-American villains. You're 100% right. Okay, Haley, I think I've given you enough time on a national show. Have a nice life. San Diego, Ed, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Michael, quick story for you. About 2 years ago, I purchased your book, Healing Children Naturally. My wife, she's liberal, conservative, and she gave all kinds of hell for, I can't believe you listen to him, how would you buy a book? I told her, listen, forget the politics. This is an educated guy, PhD. I listen, I hear the stories. This is a good book. Lo and behold, 2 years later around, I'm looking for an envelope on her desk today. Guess what? There's the book with about four or five notes. She has, you know, little marks in the pages.
Now your liberal wife was caught reading my book. How did you confront her with that or what?
No, you know what? I told the screen that I'll take the victory. I don't really need to confront.
That's right. That's exactly right. Because if you confront her, she'll throw the book out. And then you'll all lose.